It has some elements of being coherent. So obviously we're starting the parashiyas of Truma Tetzava. We're starting to look at the parashiyas of the Mishkan. So the Chagas Rishonim, the chronology of the events. The Rambam learns that the parashiyas are written in order about how they actually happen. So the concept of the Mishkan was already given to Moshe Rabbeinu before Chet Egel. And then after Chet Egel was reiterated, and then it was done. Rashi disagrees. Rashi says the parashiyas of the Mishkan were only given after the Chet Egel. So Truma Tetzava really are out of order. Really, after Mishpatim, there's going to be Kisisa, the story of the Chet Egel, that part of Kisisa. And then you're going to have Truma Tetzava, that other part of Kisisa, by Yaakov Pikuda, chronologically. So the Sipurna at the end of Parshas Yisro supports that approach as well. And he says, at the end of Parshas Yisro, after Matan Torah, we have the Psukim talk about that, which Rashi understands means that the Russian is going to come and give you the bracha of the Russian's presence. The full presence of Kadosh Baruch Hu was there, the place you're allowed to mention his name. So in the Mikdash, you're allowed to say Shem's full name. That's where I'm going to come and give you a bracha. But the Sabrina adds that before the Chet Egel, that was anywhere in the world. There was no specific place where that was going to be. The concept of a specific place was only after Chet Egel. So, so what changed? And so I was just being misbrought in a little bit. I once saw a beautiful teich from Raya Kaplan. I don't remember which one of his books he was in. The Mor says a story that Chazal said that the Shekhinah is found in every in the presence, every time place where there's a minion, the Shekhinah's presence is there. So this person said to Rishua that, you know, there's many minyanim, so how many gods are there? Right? How many Hashems do you have? You know, you have one and all them. So he said to this person that, you know, is the sun shining where we are? He said, yeah. Is the sun shining where your home back in Rome is? He said, yeah. Well, how many suns are there? Right? So that's Ad Kan the Gemara. The problem with the answer doesn't make sense. Right? The sun shines in Rome, the sun shines here, the sun shines everywhere in between. So clearly it's one sun. Over here, the question is, it shines here and there and not in the middle. So how does that work? So what was the analogy? And so so he explains that what Rishu was saying is Hashem's countenance is shining just like the sun shines. There are places where there's blockage. There's clouds in the middle. And therefore you don't see him. It's not that Hashem comes to the Beis HaKnesses. It's over there, the blockage is removed, and mainly you see him. Mm. The same way the sun shines there, and they are not in the middle because there's a cloud in the middle. So the sun really should be shining everywhere equally, but the world is a blockage, you don't see Hashem. The Beis HaKnesses, you see him. That's why it's all the same one Hashem. That's how he touched the Mordechai. Beautiful touch. Nice, yeah. Yeah. Be'etzem, the whole concept that we shouldn't see a Kodesh Baruch Hu is a plea. Right? The person's presence is real. Hashem Elokeichem Emes. Hashem Elokeichem Emes. Hashem is real. He's the greatest reality which exists. The fact that we shouldn't see him is a chiddush. That we shouldn't feel his presence in a very powerful way doesn't make any sense. But the Russian created that reality to allow us to choose. Right? There's no choice. If you see the sun, if the Russian's presence would be obvious, it would be shining at us to the point that it's beating our brow and we would be feeling it. Well, choose not. Well, we choose not. Like, what does that mean? So the Russian created a reality where he's not visible, he's not perceptible, he's not obvious. And from that vantage point, we have the ability to choose and create our world as it was. I mentioned to you once that the Baal Tanya says that the Velt says that the Bria was a Yesh Me'ayin. Really, the Bria was an Ayin Me'yesh. Bresham was Yesh. Bresham created a world where he's not. He's Ayin out of the Yesh of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the Chiddush of the Bria, not Bria Yesh Me'ayin, but Ayin Me'yesh. It's a beautiful uptight to the Baal Tanya. So Be'etzim, the Musik of a Mokim for Mishkan is a Pella. The natural reaction to Matan Torah, the Superna says, was that the Rosh would be accessible totally to any member of Klai Yisrael anywhere in the world. So that's how the Superna understands what any place in the world. That, which, if you think about it, that's logical. Now the Rosh says, you know, okay, you've done Chet the Ego. You know what? Now you need a special place. So that really touches into a reality which we have to grapple with. One of the issues that the Baal HaTanya and the Nefesh HaChaim had, one of the big things that Chassidus was introducing was an element of introducing Kabbalah to the Hamunam. And part of one of the main messages of Kabbalah is the intrinsic kedusha and value to everything which exists in the Bria. We spoke about this before, that Kabbalah's role is to explain how everything is here in the Bria as an expression of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's an emanation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It cannot have existence without a Kadosh Baruch Hu, as we're creating his existence into this thing. So you take the Bresham's existence and you turn it into a table. How do you do that? How do you make that process? And then what role does that play in the overall bigger picture? Why is that process so? That's Kabbalah's goal. So that imbued a tremendous value and kedusha to every single thing that exists in the Bria and every action which exists in the Bria, because everything is an emanation of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. One of the responses that the Nefesh HaChaim responded says that's a very dangerous concept. Because the result of that is there's no more kedusha theoretically in the table than there is in the sefer. They're both emanations of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So you can say Hashem's name in a basic kisei. Because, right? So he says we have a yediyah of Hashem Echad. Hashem Echad means that you're right, there's actually nothing else in the world. And from that vantage point, there's no way you cannot say Hashem's name in the basic Kisei, because it's just as Kaddish there as it is in the basic Knesses. But Baruch, the concept of Baruch is that there's Ribui. The Russian created different things. So the Russian may put us in a world. We know that concept. We don't live with that concept. That's not how the Torah wants us to live. The Torah put different gradations of Kedusha. By definition, it's telling them that we're not supposed to be living in a world where that's how we're supposed to look at it. So in that world, we look at the Sefer being more Kaddish than the table. And if you don't do that, you're undermining the foundation of the Torah, which means the Bereshit, for whatever reason, put us in a world where we have gradations. What the Superna is saying is those gradations were Matan Torah before the Chetah Egel. We had obscured a lot of those gradations. Any place could be the Beis Hamikdash. After Chet Egel, no, we have to have specific places to be the Beis HaMikdash. That's what he's saying. So now, again, the more you think about it, the more it's a plea that there's more Kedusha in one place than another place. How does that work? Am I making sense so far? So the Hasidim answer to that, or you know, their approach was that people should know that every single thing that they're doing has intrinsic kedusha and value, even though we don't necessarily quote unquote live on that plane in the world of practicality of mitzvahs. My tefillin is more kaddish than my tzitzis, which is more kaddish than a piece of paper. But what do you mean? There's the tzitzis of kedusha on a piece of paper. It's a holy thing, a piece of paper. Everything's right. The Baal Tashkas, you know. Reb Aaron told me a mice like with one of his children or one of his grandchildren, like one of like really straight and narrow kids. Like, so the kid learns Aleph Beis, and Aleph Beis is Kaddish, in there to start, but he's in the bathroom, and in the bathroom it says on the the thing, it says Aleph Beis. The kid was like, "Oh, mensch, how do you put Aleph Beis in the bathroom?" Right? Aleph Beis is Kaddish. Right? He's got a point, right? They should use Arabic writing in the bathroom. So I have a suggestion to this question, and it's stretching it a little bit. Okay. So before I give you my suggestion, I'll give you the quote unquote basic answer, which is I think is a cop out a little bit. But so what changed? So clearly, one thing would change is Misa. Chazal said that before Chet Egel, Bereshit had taken Misa out of the world. So which means that the goof of the human being, Klai Yisrael reached the Madrega, what reached him before the Chet, that they would live forever. So the human being's goof, through Matan Torah, through that, had reached a level of holiness that it was immortal. So if the human beings walking on the face of the earth had reached that level, so the earth had reached a level where any place in the world could be, it would be a basic mikdash, right? Well, whatever impact the Chet Egel had done, whatever that was, which introduced Misa, so it diminished everything else in the world as well. So then, from that vantage point, you can't have every place in the world being Kaddish. That's like the cop-out answer. What?
It's falling out of your jacket.
There you go. Oh. Oh, thank you. Okay. So I'm going to give you another answer, which I think doesn't answer the question like 100%. But I think it gives some thought. My father-in-law had a comment to me years back. He said that anytime you deal with numbers, it's a chayk. There's even mitzvahs which are logical. In other words, nobody would tell you the idea of eating matzah the night of Pesach is a chayk. It's a way to commemorate an event which took place. That's a logical thing. It makes sense that we have commemorations, etc. Why kazayas? Why not two kazayas? That element is going to be a chayk. Right? So you should make kiddush over yayin. Yes, yayin is something which makes you happy, etc. Why revius? And I have and I can give you six different opinions with how big a revius is. But in other words,
why can't you just have it's a basic minimal threshold to be considered eating something or drinking something?
I understand, but it's to some element. So the lulav, why one lulav? One has. Whenever you start dealing with numbers, right, you're going to get to some element of it's arguably could have been different.
Any of the details, the conceptual.
Right. So saying, so once you get involved in details, you're getting involved in the element of chayk. If the challenge of Adam-Rishon, we spoke about other times, Adam-Rishon's challenge was the idea of the Bereshit created man with a sense of independence, and the process of which that's your greatest bechira is the sense of independence doesn't allow you to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and the whole process of life is to learn to accept and give away that independence and connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Chet Egel, we spoke about this once, parallels the same problem that Klai Yisrael accept the Torah on their own terms, right? We spoke about this idea, right? And the Mishkan is a kapara, because the one person in the world who maybe had the right to do it because he figured it out was Bezalel. because he, Moshe himself said that Sal understood it better than him. But Kashasiv Hashem is Moshe. He did it. Kashasiv Hashem is Moshe. That's why Parsha Bikkur keeps saying he didn't do it because he figured it out. He did it because Hashem commanded. So there's no place in the Torah which detail is given more significance than the Parshas of the Mishkan. So it's almost as if the Rosh Hashanah has to create, if the process of the correction process for Chetah Egel is the idea of giving you something which doesn't necessarily make sense to you, and this is the way it has to be, otherwise it's not going to work, because the whole avoda is to accept that things don't make sense to me and do them anyway, and that's exactly how you will overcome the hump of connecting. So you're almost forced by definition to create a new reality which is not the same reality as before. It's a reality where the logic doesn't dictate. So logic dictates Hashem is available everywhere. He said, no, it's only available this way if you do it this way. So I'm not as accessible as you wanted. You're going to have to listen to me to get it. Before, I will come to you, according to the supporter. Wherever you are, I will come to you. That's like Russia made himself fully accessible to us, and we abused that. So Russia said, now you're going to have to come to me. Not because it's logic that you could put me in a place, but the fact you have to go through the submission process or the connecting process of coming to me. So I cannot make myself available to you everywhere. And I cannot make myself available just the way you want to do it. Right? Theoretically, is there more value in the Oren being this size versus that size? I don't know. But at one point in time, that wasn't the Ma'akev. However you did, you connected. Versus, no, you only can connect. So a weak analogy, not a perfect analogy, a weak analogy, because you know obviously there's a human element in it which doesn't apply to Kodesh Baruch Hu. I mentioned to you once the idea that Rabbi Yonah has a beautiful idea in the Ikra of Tshuva of Tefillah. He says the person should daven for various things. One of the things to daven for is that the relationship should be mended. Because anytime you blow a trust in a relationship, you need to rebuild trust. And it's possible I can be mocked at you, not upset at you, but the trust is missing. The relationship is not the same. So you can imagine a relationship like that. One of the ways that the corrective measure to solve that problem is to create a test, a bar, a new commitment in the relationship. The person says, okay, I'm happy to have a relationship with you. I need to see more on your side. You're going to come to me, do it my way, etc. It's a weak analogy because that's a human, those like human thought processes in Kodesh Baruch Hu. But there seems to be some element of that. That's what has to happen. Okay. I once saw a thought from Il Tauber about, I mentioned you were a gift to set this idea about Tamei HaMitzvahs, why they're referred to as, the word Tam means reason, also means flavor. So your gift to said, like, why do you refer to Tamei HaMitzvahs as Tamei HaMitzvahs? It says, food, nobody argues that the main primary element of food is the flavor. The impact the food has on the body is the nutrients, is the minerals, it's the vitamins, it's the water content. All those things affect the body. The flavor does not affect the body at all. The flavor is the hechatim sabayam to get into your mouth. Right? Tamei mitzvahs are the way to get you to do them. The reason why they're effective, so human beings, I know why Hashem commanded X. I know what it accomplishes. I know what it accomplishes. He says he gave an analogy of a person who does data processing on a computer. He's putting information into the computer over here, and the printout is in China. And what it's accomplishing, he doesn't even know what it's accomplishing. He knows he needs to put X out the data. The one who set up the system set up that the results are going to be found thousands of miles away, whatever. I just need to put in these pieces of information, that's the results. So mitzvahs are like the same thing like that. The mitzvah, what a mitzvah accomplishes, One idea why the kibbutz is accomplished. The Rishon tied the mitzvahs into everything in the celestial reality, the metaphysical celestial reality. What makes it easier for me to do that? Well, I see so many good reasons to do it, etc. So the time is not the real understanding of it. Same with the flavor is not the real understanding of a food. The mitzvah plays a much more real role than that. And once you get involved in like learning, you know, some of the nefesh chaim v'sabisurim, you see that, you know, that in a very significant way. So the marshal, he says that Dayenu, famous question. Like, so what happened at that moment, other than the scene of the Torah, that's so important? So Ramchal says, what happened at that moment, that let's say a Yisrael goes into the Beis Hamikdash and brings a korban. There's a tremendous statement of the diva slave of bringing a korban, but the korban is possible because Yisrael was not given the elements of neshama which allow the korban to accomplish what the korban is supposed to accomplish. A kohen was.
Not a ravim.
So now, a goy does a mitzvah. The diva slave, he's not going to do it. It's a tremendous statement of love for Kodesh Baruch, he's doing the mitzvah. But does the mitzvah accomplish all the celestial tweakings that it's supposed to accomplish? Klaiso was given that at Har Sinai. So Klaiso's neshamas now are tied to all of the metaphysical celestial reality. So we do a mitzvah, it tweaks everything it's supposed to tweak. It's like the kohen doing the right of Beis HaMikdash. The diva slave, that's what it says, the more it says that a golem mitzvah v'oisa v'yenish v'oisa. A person's enemy of voice, so he's doing because he doesn't have to do it. It shows a tremendous amount of love. That you can't take away from that. But that the mitzvah should have an intrinsic value, that it should accomplish what it's supposed to accomplish, that it can't do. Only Yisrael can do that. And that works for mitzvahs and for averus. You know, the impact that a Jew has when he does something wrong is greater than the impact when a non-Jew does something wrong. Because his being is connected to a greater reality. So I think that getting back into the Mishkan, like, it's very important to remember, like, you know, the Mishkan was a place where you almost saw that rechush, this concept. Like, Karbonis, Chazal multiple times talk about the power of the Karbonis, how they affected all the Bria, etc. You got a glimpse into that world of when you submit and when you have this, when you come to me and connect, the results are very powerful. But reality, that's supposed to be a limit for all the mitzvahs. So any mitzvah that a person does has that intrinsic koyach, which is intrinsic whether I understand it or not. So it's interesting, my wife and I were going for this Shabbaton for the girls, as older single girls Shabbaton that were going for the Shabbos, you know. One of the mechazkim, I guess we're called. I thought the fifth year we're going this year. So my wife's, the topic is, because it's right before, is Simcha. Obviously it's a very chashuv topic for these girls, you know, a lot of them, you know, difficult. I just got the panel questions. They're painful to read, you know, like, you know. So my wife was talking about the idea of simcha so mitzvah. So she said, so obviously the greatest simcha of a mitzvah is the fact that simcha is a human being can serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That the Rishon actually, you know, we saw that the Rishon cares. Like that statement is so overwhelming that the Rishon cares. That's a tremendous statement of simcha. But she said, you know, something that doesn't motivate us sometimes. You know, when you understand Tamei Mitzvahs, you understand how a mitzvah is important, significant, the message that it does, etc. It creates something better, you know, more of a connection. So, you know, we were going back and forth on that, which one should we stress? Because I think that people lose that element of thinking about that. Of the tremendous love of relationship, it's intrinsic just to the concept of a mitzvah. That the Russian cares about what I'm doing is a tremendous statement of love. Like, I can be so insignificant that, you know, we spoke this two or three weeks ago, like, the logic is that the Bresham should not be interested. We're so distant from him that it's illogical that the Bresham be interested in us. And the Bresham says, I am interested in you, is a tremendous, beautiful statement of how important we are to him. So I actually spoke about that 3 years ago by the girls. I can't do it, talk about it again.
You know, got married, it's a new crop.
Yeah, there's some of the older girls, Nabok, are still there. I can reference it, but I can't make it the Gantad Rosher. Sing by the Surah Shabbos day. But the that Nakuda of, but the, I would like to stress that there's the relationship element, there's the Tamei Mitzvahs, which are the logical understandings of it, and then there's the metaphysical reality that has impact. Everything you do has impact. I don't think they hear it enough, but about Chassidim, that's like, this is like that standard. Like, every single thing you do is halik, you know, shayim yichikichibrichi. Like, everything is like, you know, a whole. It's a beautiful thing that we walk, everything gets imbued with the concept of Kedusha. It's, you know, it's Klaiso before the Chet Ego to some extent. The problem is, we're not holding by that madrega to really live like that, and that's what the Nefesh HaChaim is grappling with. But that, to some element, to tap into that, the real reality is still there to some extent. That whatever we do, wherever we are, is always connecting into the world of Kedusha. I think we shouldn't lose that. Number one. Number two, we understand that because we've abused that, we need to, as it were, come to him and follow his directives to get that relationship again. And that's the symbolism of the idea of a makam, where the person was more available, or an action which has a greater presence of Kadosh Baruch Hu, a day of a week where the person is. The Rambam says lost love, but the Karbanos are going to be, you know, the Rambam learns that lost love is to be not going to be Karbanos in the base of Mikdash. The Ramban gets very nervous on him on that issue, you know.
Why not? I mean, why less of love than won't be any kabbalas?
So the Ram, well, the simple reading of the Rambam says that the simple reading of the Rambam is the Rambam sees kabbalas as a concession to human frailty, that we need an action, as it were, to connect to Kadosh Baruch Hu, and we can reach a madrega of such clarity, etc., that just through contemplation, we're going to be connected to Kadosh Baruch Hu. We don't need to do the actions.
To wean us away from pagan society.
So Rambam learned that the Avodah Zorah was a problem. Klaisel was of the Avodah Zorah. To take it away from Avodah Zorah without giving us something in place of it, Karbonus, the way to serve Kadosh Baruch Hu, similar to where they said Klaisel will not be able to handle. But eventually we're going to grow past that. Which obviously, you know, the Rambam is like injecting his own thought process into the psukim, that karbonos are concession to Klai Yisrael's frailty. Shir Reb Chaim, so the Rambam, one of the Rambam's questions on the Rambam is, on Rishon Brach karbonos before there's no Avodah Zarah yet. Because I'll say on Rishon Brach karbonos. Right, so how can Makri and Karbonis, if the whole purpose of Karbonis is to concession to Avodah Zarah, there wasn't Avodah Zarah yet.
Right?
How does Pasha Pshalak in the Torah's Nitzchi then? The Rambam is funny. So Shir Chaim, we used to always say it over, used to say, Avada Gevist, for sure, I'm translating English, right? Avada Gevist, right? That the person put an intrinsic nature into man that he wants to give to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's expressed by adoration, bringing karbonos. That was there before any chet. That was there. The Avodah Zarah abused that, misused that, etc. And at some point in time, theoretically, because of that, just like the Pesukim say that B'mei Ovis, the idea of a matzeva, was considered something good. The Torah asks is L'sukim L'chol matzeva. Later on, it becomes also because they use it as a chekla v'rezara. Theoretically, we should have taken away karbonis. We didn't take away karbonis as a concession to that. That was something which they would not be able to handle. So we're going back to the original reality of that the nature of man is to give. That's how he touched that part of the Rambam. He didn't discuss the loss of love part of it. So why is he about the loss of love? So I'm just wondering with what I'm saying. Shot the Rambam, I don't think shot the Rambam, but there is a chazal like this: the loss of love, all carbonos will be brought, will be brought, except for carbon title. Right. So it's pshat because there's no chet. If what we're saying theoretically, the natural state of being between a man and a Kadosh Baruch Hu shouldn't need a vehicle to make a connection, because Bereshit is everywhere. The Bereshit made this gap, this distance, and we need to bridge. We need to do our actions to bridge the gap. There's going to be a period of time in the future where that gap is going to be. It's not going to be there anymore. Bereshit is going to, as it were, reconnect. So the natural state of being is we're together. I don't need those actions. I'm just, throwing out such an idea. So the parashas, just to recap, that was my thought. So the parashas of the Mishkan are, we're used to reading them, so they don't throw us that much, but it's like detail after detail after detail, parasha after parasha after parasha. And the whole concept of a specific mokum and specific details seems to be illogical. It's a mamash hachayik. Point one. Point two is the Sperner says that before Chet HaEgel, actually none of this would have existed. Right? So what changed? So we're suggesting what changed is that the need for proving yourself, that you're willing to commit to come to the connection, is going to require that there's details, you're doing it on my terms. Next point is that obviously these have an intrinsic value on a higher level, which we don't necessarily relate to. Like every mitzvah has those parts of it. The reason why it's a kazayas, not a kebeya, is for a very good reason, not just a tzachayk. But from our vantage point, we don't know why that's so. So we look at a tzachayk. But the Bereshit that set up the computer for a very good reason, why that's the input. And the action which we do has an output. Every action, every mitzvah which we do has an output celestially, right, metaphysically. We don't see what it is. We don't know what it is. So we need to, for our vantage point, like, why that? So we come along and say different timing to explain why the size of the urn is this size, of the, different symbolism, etc. That's all a way to make it more palatable for us to do it. But reality is nobody's thinking that that's the real reality. There's much more to it, and there is, it's not just a chayk, but it actually has an impact. But the derech pshat of why that's what role that's going to play is it allows us to rebuild the relationship because we're committed to doing whatever it takes to make the relationship work, i.e., following the dictates of the other partner. So the wife gives her husband a list of penance to do to get back, after he abused the trust, right? So he's got to follow those to the T. You want to rebuild the trust. He says, listen, I'm an independent guy. I'm going to do my own way. That's not going to fix that problem. So over here, there's that element, maybe, but there's also a greater element of, obviously it has a tremendous impact. But the fact that we needed the impact that way and not as opposed to being totally accessible, because there was a need there was a damage into the whole fiber of the Bria. It's my thought process. It's a little bit esoteric, but I think there's a lot to it. I this Chassidish thing about everything being Kaddish, I'd love to publicize it, you know, but I'm a Litvak, you know. I'm saying, you know, it definitely comes with a problem.
What is Kaddish, though? What, I mean, when you say it's Kaddish, what is, I mean, everything is Kaddish Baruch Hu, but what, Kaddish in what way?
One of the things that Chassidim were addressed was the feeling of the Amoratzim being insignificant compared to the Mishnah Chachamim. If you understand the Kedusha of any action you do is an expression of Kadosh Baruch Hu, there's not greater Kedusha to a learning Shas than to dancing a tensil. Not dancing. Right. That was part of their message. So you're just as good as the rest. You dance and he learns. Now, the Litvak says, excuse me, Talmud Harkanei Kulam, you know, doesn't work like that. Within the realm of Torah, there are gradations. The Talmud Chacham gets more covered than the guy who dances. But part of the message of the Chassidim was, no, it's Al Sezel. Which is why by the original courts of the Chassidim, the Tumin Chachamim and Amoratzim were treated exactly the same. There was no Musaf Kavod to Tumin Chachamim. That was one of the big tainas that the guy had was you're undermining Kavod to Tumin Chachamim. That's a very dangerous thing. There was the Rebbe and everybody else. So you could have this tremendous Talmud Chacham who was like Misachs to the Rebbe just the same as all the other Chassidim. They're very again. That was like a. It's very uplifting for the Amoritz. You know, like, you know, you don't learn anything, you don't know anything, but the mice, you're just as good as, or, you know, as this fellow who spent his whole life, you know, but because everything's Kaddish, you're not less Kaddish than he is. Bershom made you. Dancing is like a holy thing, because you're expressing your love for Kaddish Baruch Hu, right? That the worm, you know, you can't eat it, but a worm is mamash, it's Kedusha. There's hashkach on a worm. They had all these different thought processes. But that musa, that everything has value in the Kodesh Baruch Hu's eyes, that's why he created it. I mean, how would I say it? Or use Moshe Feinstein as Moshe Feinstein was an Adam Gadol. Just like way beyond, you know, way beyond. If he comes along and tells me that this is important to him, for whatever reason, what I've just done is taken that item, which seems to be a mundane item, and made it to something else quite extraordinary because it's important to the one who, to Moshe Feinstein. So if this table is important to Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is not just a table. This is a Kadosh Baruch Hu's thing. Sal Shulchan Hashem Lifnei Hashem. While the Russian put a table in the world, obviously it's important to him. Because everything, when it doesn't exist, unless Kadosh Baruch Hu gives it existence. So everything is important. So that's very, very clutch of things to understand. And that's true. But the Nefesh HaChaim's problem is, but you know, from that vantage point, you very quickly get confused. So why is it more important? Why is tefillin more important than a piece of paper? You know, it becomes very, very confusing. So you said you can't. You think about it too much. It's a concept, but that message shouldn't be destroyed. You know, it shouldn't be like taken off. Excuse the pun, off the table, right? And that wasn't okay, that was good. Come on, good, take the message off. Okay, right. Like, because we need to know that everything, we are a Kadosh Baruch Hu being expressed, that everything around this is the Rosham expressing, is the Rosham's active desire that it should exist, that it exists. It means it's there for a reason. It has value. Every action that I do has value, because Rosham is willing it to exist. Okay, one totally different thought. I had a crazy thought. I mentioned to you once, you know, that you know Nishmas, the Nusach of the Nishmas of the billions and billions of Chassadim, like, and after I'm speaking, like, do I really feel inadequate for thanking Hashem for like one of the you know quintillion? I don't know. I think I might be pretty good at that. All of them is a little challenging. But like, I can't even be mastered to thank Kodesh Baruch Hu for one of the quintillion things he does for me. So like, I'm not even aware anywhere near the most quintillion things that he's doing for me. So I had a thought process which is another question. You say in Nishmas that even if our mouths were full like the sea, and you know, we would not be able to have the ability to thank Hashem Baruch Hu for one of the myriad of things that He does for us. So the math, it's elef alfei alefim, v'ribei ruhavos pamim. So elef is 1,000, alfei is 1,000, alefim is 1,000. So it's 1,000 times 1,000 times 1,000.
Billion.
Right. Now a revova is 10,000. 10,000 times 10,000. So you add in 8 more zeros. So it's 100 quadrillion, right? Okay. So we're saying that the Baruch Hu is doing 100 quadrillion favors to you, and you can't even take him out. You, with all of that expanded ability to be this flying being who had the mouth like the sea and the tongue like the waves, you couldn't even say enough for one of them out of that 100 quadrillion. I say the words, like, you know, it's like so. I mean, had you expanded my capacity a millionfold, I still couldn't describe one of that one to the 18th power, whatever the number is, right? What is it? It's no 17th power. 1 to the 17th power. 10 to the 17th power, right? Thank you. Right. So I had a crazy thought. There's a trillion cells approximately in a human being. Each cell has tremendous amount of different processes which are going inside the cell. There's in the cell, there's DNA. And then there's mitochondrial DNA. And then there's the RNA. And then there's the cytoplasm. Like, you know, so if one thing goes wrong in that cell, the person can get cancer. So there's a myriad of things taking place in my trillions of cells on a daily, on an hourly basis. So I'm not so far away from 100 quadrillion in my own body. And then there's 7.5 billion people in the world, which we impact each other. So you take that number and you multiply it times 7.5 billion people. Not just the human beings on the world. Then there are all the physical things we're taking.
Ants.
Well, you know, leave it. The world has to function. The gas has to be the right proportion for all of us, and that's all this world. And so I think, you know what? I think I can hear the number. I can hear the number. I can hear what it means. That how would we really, if I start dysfunctioning. Or that person that's dysfunctioning, that impacts the person. The domino effect is so overwhelming. How the impact is not minimal; it's maximal. That we have we're limited in our capacity to think. So I just try to have this week. It just hit me like how to like concretize the numbers, like. So I just wanted to share that with you. It was a little bit different. A little bit different thought, a little bit more down to earth than the other one. So I tried the research today on very briefly online. I don't have time for to like how many processes the average human cell is doing per hour.
All right.
So it was a very hard question, you know, to get, because like, what's the average human cell? Like, you know, it's different types of cells, etc. Like, how many the basic processes, you know, converting proteins into amino acids, you know, breaking it down, absorbing it, you know, how much is taking place in a cell and per hour? I couldn't get an answer. I didn't get an answer yet. I need that someone like, you know, could help me figure out how to search for it right, or somebody knows the answer actually.
That too.
Right. But I'm sure it's not a small number. Okay. Thank you.